Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Welcome to Relationships Rule, the show that explores the power of authentic relationships in business and life. Today's guest, Sloan Wilkins, brings a refreshing perspective to one of the most emotionally charged topics in any relationship, money. Known as the Buddhist financial coach, Sloan combines decades of financial experience with mindfulness principles to help people talk openly, align their finances with their values, and reduce the stress money can cause. In our conversation, we'll explore how mindful communication around money can strengthen your most important relationships, and how Sloan's own journey from financial distress to freedom informs the work he does today. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show, Sloan Wilkins, all the way from Brisbane, Australia.
It's very good to be here. Well, it's good morning my time, Janice.
Yes, and, I know.
Early evening for you, late afternoon.
It's tomorrow. It's actually three o'clock in the afternoon, but it's tomorrow for you. You're on Wednesday.
Yeah, I can. I'm looking outside, and I can tell you the future looks bright.
Thank you so much. So, are you used to this? Like, you work with a lot of people in the U.S. and Canada, or just the U.S.? I'm not sure, but
Yes, most places around the world, it's sort of either end of the day that the time zones align.
Right.
And that's the beauty of this technology, isn't it? We just get to connect with so many more people.
Totally. I know. That was one of the good things that came out of COVID, I think, if nothing else. But
yes.
So let's start, Sloan, with your story. What was your turning point when it came to money and personal transformation? I know you've got a story, and I'd like you to share it a little.
Yeah. It definitely was the story when I was 12 years old. I found out the hard way what financial devastation feels like. And that was by virtue of mum and dad. You know, they had a business and they experienced bankruptcy. And as a result, they lost their business. We had a really nice life. We lost our family home. And of course, a few years later, we actually lost our family unit as well, because mum and dad's marriage didn't survive all of that. So it was...
That's common.
I guess an insight. Yeah,
that's common.
It was an insight I wasn't looking for, but as a 12-year-old, and it's really difficult to understand. But when you see the impact of finances up close and personal, and you don't understand money as a 12-year-old, not many do. It's sent me down a road, and I ended up working for a bank straight out of school. So that was not the bank that was involved in my parents' bankruptcy, fortunately. I don't know how that would have gone down, but I always was interested to know more about money because I just had to learn. I couldn't understand.
Sure. That's cool. My little granddaughter there was a picture taken at school the other day. She's at like an outdoor school, and they were sitting out in the forest, and she had this box in front of her. She's in kindergarten, so she's almost six. And they had all different kinds of money, in coins and paper money. And I asked her last weekend, I said, "So tell me what you were doing with that box of money." She said, "We were learning about money. I can tell you, Grandma, that the $100 bill is this color, and orange, and then the $50 bill is pink or red, and the $20 bill is green. This is Canadian money," and so on. And she was like right into it. And I said, "Oh, that's so good." So yeah, she likes money. She knows that she can spend, money at the dollar store, and you've got it and you don't have it, but she likes to spend it too.
And how good are they giving them a tangible experience of coins and notes, where so often we grab our phone and tap these days?
I know, that's so true. But then it's the same with everything, right? Old school, new school. Yeah. I know, it's so true. And they do need to have, it's like the telling the time thing and the tying the shoelaces thing. They don't get the old fashioned way quite often, but they need to have something. Yeah, anyway, we think, anyway. So you describe yourself as the Buddhist financial coach. How did mindfulness become part of your financial philosophy?
Yeah, well, I think it became part of my life first.
Period.
As a result. Yeah, look, my background is 30 years in corporate life, banking and wealth management. And I only exited in 2021, and then started what I'm doing now. But back when I was 40, so that's almost 11 years ago now, I'm still the big 5-0. But yeah, I was just a big ball of stress at work. And I thought, I need some way to calm my farm. So I decided that I'd go and learn to meditate. I thought that that would be easier than recovering from a heart attack or a stroke. So
Very wise,
fortunately,
very wise.
I didn't get to find out. Yeah, so that was, I went to learn actually transcendental meditation, which is, there's a lot of research behind it, which is one of the reasons I chose it. And I didn't know anything about Buddhism in that stage. But that sent me on a journey where always that personal development, that great theme that I had running through my life morphed into, over time, spiritual development. And I started to explore different teachings coming from a Christian background, just what was going to add value to my life. And so, yeah, it just ended up resonating with me, particularly, kindness and compassion, as I started to move more from chasing ambition in my life to what was meaningful. And that occurred more and more through my mid-40s, where I realized chasing or climbing that corporate ladder, even though I was getting where I wanted to get, it wasn't doing the job I thought it was going to do in terms of making me happy. So, yeah, that's sort of where that all came from. And it just naturally spreads, I think, throughout all our life. And that's true of things that are great for us and also some things that are not good for us sometimes. We just need to make sure we're on the right track.
So, do you have children?
Yes. Yeah,
And
they are. Yeah.
they were in their formative years when you started to have this happen?
Yes, they would have been. So my eldest son actually turned 25 yesterday. And sorry, our eldest son. And then we had a 6-year gap. And our daughter's 18, turning 19. So she's in her first year of college this year.
That's
And
fantastic. So
yeah,
yeah,
so we
so
go
I
back
just wonder if
those
it,
years.
yeah, that would have had a big piece in terms of spending more time with them. And as they got older, I would think, you want to be there for them, and your stressful job at the bank kept you there longer and things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to say that it turned my world on its head immediately, but that's not true. It was a gradual, probably like turning a big cruise ship. It doesn't happen on a dime. It takes a long time.
Yeah,
So,
of
yeah.
course. Yeah, but that's very cool. Did your family follow in your footsteps, or is that something that's just you? The
We all went
Buddha.
to learn to meditate together,
Oh,
the
cool.
transcendental. So they've got those skills there. I'm probably the most regular out of my family, and I guess that makes sense. I was the driving force of wanting to go. But no, they've visited the local monastery that I go to, but it's not something that they've picked up. And it's one of those philosophies. It's not about proselytizing anyway. It's
Right, exactly.
really something that people discover, and it's a philosophy that makes sense in various different ways. It can even sit quite well alongside Christianity.
So, in your work now as a financial coach, what do you find is the biggest roadblock when it comes to talking about money with your clients? And again, I let's just clarify. I know you work with couples, families, and you also work with business owners, right? And
Correct. That's right.
okay, so whichever way you want to go on this is fine. I think it's probably
Look,
all the same.
yeah, there is a big crossover between the two, and often it's all bundled up within one couple. You'll have one professional person and one that owns a business, and of course they help each other out. But by the time we're having our first conversation, they've already taken a really important step, and that's sort of creating, realizing that this is something they want to work on. And it doesn't mean there's necessarily huge problems. And a lot of my clients, they've got really quite good incomes. They just need to be more intentional and actually give it time. We're all super busy these days. It's the busyness epidemic. But setting aside some time to actually start conversations is step one. So I think life is the answer to that question. We can allow it to get in the way if we're not careful, particularly if you get home at the end of a busy week. It's not something natural for many people to sit down and have, Friday night finances as a conversation topic. It's just not going to happen. So we do need dedicated space to do that. And the second and final thing I'd point out is we also need to have a reasonable foundation of trust and openness. trust to talk to other people, but also trust to talk to themselves and
And
be
each
willing to
other
have,
to each other.
That's like that interpersonal component. We truly are in it together with our partners when we're talking about money. So, but we don't always act like that. So bringing them together and actually coalescing a team that's, it's there, but we just need to get it, you know, operating functionally.
That's totally true. I can relate to that. So tell me though, when you're working with people, your philosophy around it, because I know there's different ones where I think of a very famous American woman who's all about budgeting. Everything's about budgeting. And then I think of others, another woman actually who's big in finance in the States. And she was a financial coach as well, I think is what she called herself. She's all about paying yourself, investing as well as saving. So there's different philosophies. Where do you fit in?
Yeah, look, I'll probably go across a broad spectrum of those. And whilst I do have a framework, which I didn't create, I've certainly made my own touches to it. But really what I think is at the end of the day, it's about meeting people where they are.
Okay.
It's no good me talking about a certain principle or philosophy if they've got a part of their financial life that is literally on fire.
Right,
sorry, not literally,
right.
figuratively on fire, and we need to deal with that.
Like, okay,
I always say we don't talk about interior decorating of a house if it's on fire.
Yeah.
Let's deal with the most pressing issue first, and we'll get to that. But I personally budget. I like it. And with clients, I refer to the term a spending plan, which again I think it softens that and makes it more accessible to people. It also reinforces from my perspective that it's okay to spend. We just need to make sure it's high quality spending, which means that it's intentional, it's on purpose, it's lined up with things that are meaningful to you and your family and your goals, not driven by whatever the latest marketing campaign that you saw was. That tends
really?
To be low quality.
Oh, come on.
the late night doom scrolling on whatever social media you're watching is unlikely to grow your financial strength. I use that with clients. We do a deep dive up front and say, where's the money going? And that's important because to map out a journey, same as a GPS, you need to know where you are first. So we do that.
Sure.
But later on, it really becomes the litmus test becomes, are we regularly paying our bills? And then are we meeting our savings and investing goals / debt reduction if they're dealing with that as well? Because if all those things are happening, the rest of the day-to-day spending should be within the realms of okay. And we don't need to be perfect. It's such an important thing. I reinforce with all my clients, it's all about progress. Perfection is too high a standard for any one of us to meet. So, I think I draw from all of those different philosophies.
Okay, fair enough. And do you find whether you're working with, because the principles are the same, whether it's in a business or in a marriage, we'll say, do you find that one person's the spender and one person's usually the saver? Or do you ever find them aligned in a good way or a bad way?
Oh, there's so many different combinations of it. Yes, if you get two spenders together, that can be a challenge if it's uninhibited spending. But, it's the same as being an extrovert or an introvert. We might have a natural inclination. However, we can adopt the other style in certain circumstances. So it's situational. So even though you might be naturally a saver and you may potentially actually need some encouragement to spend on some things that actually matter to you.
Yes.
And I can think of some specific examples with a client that were doing quite well, yet the female part of the equation, she refused to spend on her yoga and Pilates, which were deeply important to her, not just from a physical perspective, but also, for example, the spiritual side of yoga, et cetera. And she wasn't allowing herself to tap into that because she thought they needed to be squirreling away every dollar. It's you got to find that balance, which, a Buddhist term for that would be find the middle way. We are neither spending everything we've got and then some, or saving every penny.
Yeah, for
You've
sure.
You've got to find that balance.
Okay.
And so to answer your question more directly, it's good to be aware of what your natural inclination is, but we can adjust that And it's you just need to recognize and have the antenna up. Well, okay, I would normally be spending. Let's pull that back or put some parameters around that spending is normally the way I describe it. It's okay.
Do you find that you're a marriage counselor sometimes instead of just the financial counselor?
Yeah, that and a psychologist as well. And it's interesting, I do get quite a number of clients referred to me, single clients from family lawyers who they're on the other side of a relationship breakdown or a divorce, and they're typically seeking, most of them are women, and they're most often seeking to reassert themselves financially, sort of reclaim their own agency. It but yeah, definitely money interweaves with so many areas of our life. It is that source of one of the most frequently cited sources of disagreement, and also one of the main contributors to relationship breakdown. It's a big
Absolutely.
thing.
I was going to ask this question, which I think we've just answered, but there's a piece to it. How do emotions, past experiences, or upbringing influence the way we handle money with other people? Period. And I think one of the things that we haven't touched on there is, you experienced it firsthand when you were 12 and your parents lost their business. So you had that experience. I remember when I was young, my father always, quoting all these, money doesn't grow on trees. And, he used to say this one that never went away from me. It's not a crime to be poor, it's a crime to look poor. Now that can take you down a really bad path of spending. Okay. And right. And so those things that we learn as a child around, or we did, I don't know if we sit around the table anymore the way that we used to at dinner and things like that. But, things that our parents teach us, it's hard to break those habits.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some really good neurological reasons why, and it's the way that we learn as humans. We sort of absorb everything almost by osmosis, and our brain really doesn't have the capacity to be discerning about the information until we're really in our early teens. It just almost adopts and accepts what it's seeing and experiencing as the truth or relevant or and oftentimes useful when it may not be a useful behavior. So it's worth examining those. Like our caregivers and our parents, they did the best they possibly could. I don't think anyone sets out to provide a poor example with how to deal with their finances. They're doing what they can. And we still don't learn this stuff in schools. So
I know.
necessarily
Isn't that
it's whatever
something?
we can take on board. Yeah, it just is. But so beliefs are harder to shift. Habits and behaviors are easier, not easy, to adjust. And that's part of the work that we do with people there. And it can manifest in so many different ways. And you see this with like twins, for example, who've been raised in a family and have had one parent who might be an alcoholic. One of them can end up an alcoholic, the other one refuses to drink at all. So our reaction to our early life and the responses and the stimulus can be widely divergent. And I do see that in couples, but it's good to bring those money stories to the surface, talk about them. And so that's how we actually strengthen our relationship, not just with money, but in our life.
Yeah, with each other, for sure. Do you believe in lim do you see limiting beliefs being part of the issue for people sometimes?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a huge factor, and it plays out once again in all different spheres of our life. But with finances, we may not. And for me, many years I was terrified to be in business for myself. It's probably why I spent 30 years in corporate, being, in the safe and secure environment of receiving a paycheck, because of what my parents. I just thought business was risky. And of course, like we know that it is, but risk isn't to be avoided, it's to be managed and understood. So I didn't appreciate that until I was, gosh, well into, my 30s and even early 40s before I started to think about what that might look like. So that's one example. So we may also not notice opportunities because we feel like, that's success is for other people. I don't know anything about investing. I won't even try. I won't explore. We push ourselves down into these tiny little boxes with our beliefs sometimes, but we can also use them to set ourselves free when we're intentional.
So when you were, maybe even when you were in banking, but I'm wondering if before when you went into business for yourself, did you pick up any personal development books around money? I'm thinking of like Robert Kiyosaki. What's his called? It's just gone from my head now.
Rich Dad,
Rich
Poor
Man,
Dad.
Poor Man. Yeah, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That one comes to mind. But other ones, did you get into any of those?
Yeah, like even right back to the classics, Think and Grow Rich,
Yes,
which for
yes.
many, many years I avoided reading because of the title. I thought it was a
1937, that
I know
book
there's
was
so
written.
much knowledge out there,
Yeah.
and it's so relevant today because even though the circumstances around us have changed, fundamentally ourselves, the way we are wired neurologically and biologically, that hasn't shifted. So it's incredibly relevant to us today. The Richest Man in Babylon, which is such a short read.
Oh, I don't know that one. Yeah.
It's again probably from a very similar time and
Yeah.
teaches him through a parable. I love
Yes,
parables.
yes.
It's really easy to engage. Ken Honda, who's a Japanese money expert, I really like his work. It's very accessible. And I'm thinking of Dale Carnegie as well, and
Yes.
how to win friends and influence people, because
Yes.
that's all about the science of relating well to others.
Yes.
And of course, all our business success is built upon being able to relate well and serve with others, not in a Machiavellian way, but from a very authentic way, which is why I love, one of your most recent guests, Chris Bogue, on the podcast, where he was talking about, an area that I'm still yet to master, showing up online authentically with video content.
Video, yeah.
I tend to be very, quite staid and sitting up, where if listening to Chris, I need to be more authentic and relax into it. So that's
Yeah,
so
don't just
important.
listen to him now. Go and look at his LinkedIn videos because he's on LinkedIn and he does these silly videos. That's not everybody for sure, but it does make you think, right? About it. You don't even have to be, standing with a plain background. You could be sitting like you are now on the Zoom video, but just more relaxed, maybe into the conversation for sure. And I think, yeah, he did have a good message in that. But we have to, and I think the message around that too is, which I think I put out in the show, in my message that went out with my newsletter that goes out to say the video or the podcast episode is online now. I put in that one, done is better than perfect,
Correct,
right? So done is better than perfect. So we're going aside a little bit, but you're right in the sense that, yeah, we just have to practice. And I know I'm the same as you. I don't like doing it, but the people, if you've got something to say and it's of value to people, they're not looking at whether my glasses are on straight or not. They're just looking at, they're listening to what you have to say. And I guess we just have to get over it.
That's true.
So, but thanks for sharing that. And thanks for a shout out there. That's great. Can you give me an example of where improved financial communication transformed a working relationship, like a business that, of the people, the partners in the business, or an outcome from working with you?
Yeah, absolutely. It sometimes it plays out on a few different levels. One, the business owners themselves, that can be often the first point of engagement. So the business owner and their spouse or their partner. And we're holistic beings. We don't live our personal life at home. It comes with us to work.
Sure.
So if there's any financial stress going along, that's bubbling away even in our subconscious and occupying mental space, limiting creativity. So it has that positive impact on them. They've actually got more headspace to be able to truly be in their business when they are there, rather than worrying about the financial side of it. Because worrying about our finances, I'm not worrying about it. Dealing with our finances is important. Worrying about them is not helpful. But
Right.
building our business, that we think about what mindset will be useful for us to make better decisions, to think about products and services enhancements for our clients, to think about how we're looking after our very best clients. That requires, an open, calm, relaxed, and creative mindset. We wouldn't plug in if we had the choice, and a mindset that was anxious, stressed, and fearful to try and make good quality decisions, would we? Yet so
Right.
often we do that. So that's the the personal side there of what I think, what I've seen play out. But also when I'm working with a business and their staff around financial well-being, that's more principles-based. It's the same framework. I'm just not going as deep with them because it's not a one-on-one relationship. But that makes a big difference as well, to productivity, to reduction in absenteeism, and a reduction in turnover or resignations, leaving the job, chasing a few extra $1,000 down the road, which is sort of understandable, but it's not really addressing the root issue, which is often our relationship with money and how we are working with it, and also what we think is possible, what steps we're following that can be fundamental to help us there. That's the stuff that I work on. Again, you know, we achieve results in business through our teams. It makes sense to help them be at their very best when they are at work as well. And that means financial well-being, it's not just a perk that's offered, even though it's often described that it's actually a driver of productivity.
For sure. Okay, what's your ideal client?
I would say it is that nice mix of a professional person and a business owner, and definitely in that same relationship or one or the other. I tend to attract people through the wonderful world of LinkedIn, which is where I hang out a lot as well.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
And so unsurprising that I suppose that's the type of people that I attract. The other thing about them is they're looking to move to a new level, not just with their finances, but also elevating their life. That key thing. And I in my mind think about, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, moving beyond that safety and security where finances are right in our face to exploring, once we deal with that and get that on track, we don't need to solve it to start moving forward. We just need to know we're on the right pathway. But then, you know, what am I becoming on purpose? It's my to-be list rather than my to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
And growing into what we could contribute to others, the community, and sometimes that means career changes or going back to study. I really love people who are on their way somewhere and trying very much to happen to their life and happen to their finances rather than experiencing it as an external force.
So you have two children, grown children, and
yes,
did you teach them to be able to be independent and to have certain guidelines around money at an early age?
Yes. Look, some of it by watching. I know it wasn't always doing things well, but I got progressively better and better. So, but some of it very deliberately as well, because they will absorb, they will see what's happening. And wonderful things that are really great to see is even goal setting, like as a family or as a couple, having goals, and they don't need to be financial goals,
right?
But visible somewhere, because, you know, that says, okay, well, I can choose to move towards something. I can set that aspiration. I can take steps and I can get there. And that's broadly applicable to life and our finances. So that's a really good lesson. And I'm super proud of my son. He did a 5-year degree or double degree after school. And so he's now only in his third year of full-time work. But even when he started working part-time, I think that is a critical age in their teenage years where they're starting to have that part-time job, bring in some income. It becomes real for them then. Being able to sort of understand that transition between I give X hours, I get this reward. And it's just like, oh gosh, I really start to think about, you know, that pair of shoes actually represents 10 hours worth of work for me. Yeah. Is it worth it?
Did they get allowances?
Not really. No, so certainly nothing large. It was more so just around more, a little bit of spending money. Like it might have been $10 or $20. Nothing significant. Of course, there was chores that went with that.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. My granddaughter, this is what they see now. Okay, I said 5 and a half, almost 6 actually. And going for coffee with mom and grandpa, they have a Starbucks card, right? Or whatever, or their credit card. It could be either. So before Christmas, Amara said, I want my own card, grandpa. I want my own card. It's not money. It's the card, right? So
yes.
She got like a, a card, a Starbucks card that had 10 hot chocolates on it, kids' hot chocolates on it. So she could go and present her own card when she went.
Oh, that's so
I
cute.
think it's so funny because it's like, does that relate to money? Well, in a way it does, because once the card's finished, it's finished, right? So
Yes.
yeah, I don't know. It's just so funny to see it's such a different world today. Anyway,
But that's also about agency as well, being able
yes.
to interact with and
Being
impact the world in
control.
a way that hopefully serves. Yeah, control is a big one as well,
Yeah.
being able to have the sense of control, not feeling controlled.
Exactly. Yeah.
And for women, super important as well. Like, I'm really working with my daughter now, a lot more around investing, because my son took on board all those lessons and has really, he will hopefully be into his own home in the next year, couple of years or so, which is
Nice.
very challenging
Yeah.
in our country because it's one of the
Yeah.
most expensive real estate markets in the world.
Oh, wow.
So,
More so than
but
here? Like,
yes.
yeah, wow. Okay.
Look, I think you guys are up there as well.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, so last question. Not well, second to last question. This is more, I think I know what you're going to say, but what I'd like your take on curiosity. I love curiosity. I'm a very curious person.
Yes.
Do you think it's innate or learned? And second part is, what are you most curious about these days? So there's no right or wrong answer, of course, but what's your take on it?
I think I think some people are more naturally curious, but I think it can be developed. And I wish I could think of the name of the French philosopher who, when he was asked about nature and nurture, his
Oh.
response was, well, that both are important. It's a little bit like asking which is more important to the area of a field, the length or the breadth. So I always think about that. It's important, and we can develop there as well. But what I'm most curious about right now is, particularly in the world of financial well-being for employees, and I've actually jumped in this year. I'm part of the Global Well-being Institute and their Workplace Well-being Initiative. So that operates out of the US, and I'm one of 18 professionals around the world that are contributing towards that and asking important questions about how we deliver more well-being at work. Obviously, my focus is financial well-being.
Yeah, of
So I'm really
course.
curious about all the interactions there and the most effective ways that we can help our employees thrive, which absolutely delivers great outcomes for business owners as well.
That's fantastic. I love it. So last question. What would you say to my listeners who want to take a next step? What's one thing they can do this week to move toward mindful financial alignment in, through work or through their personal, relationships?
If they're part of a partnership, as in, well, it could be business partnership, but also spouses and
Yeah.
life partners there as well, I would be book in a 15-minute chat about money and
Okay.
start that journey. You don't need to be perfect. And I literally will say to people, regular short conversations are more important than once every 6 months spending 2 hours looking at your finances. The latter will drive you crazy. The
Yes.
other will actually become an empowering source of driving your finances and your relationships. Literally set a timer on your iPhone when you sit down for 15 minutes. Give yourself permission to stop the conversation, because if you're regularly having them, you will get much better at talking about the things that are important this week, this month, in that 15-minute time slot. And of course, yeah, I can share more about that, but about
No,
what to
that,
talk about.
yeah,
That's
that's
really
great
important to
advice. Well,
begin the conversation.
they can book that time with you and see what it's all about. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So, you do remind us that relationships flourish when we have the courage to communicate, even about the tough stuff like money. Through mindfulness, compassion, and practical action, I know that you help people align their financial lives with their deeper values. Whether you're just starting out or years into a relationship, your message is clear. Talking about money isn't just smart, it's essential for lasting connection. And this was delightful. And considering that, like, we met by chance, somebody I know introduced us, somebody you had met randomly too, right? And
Yes.
And I love that it was easy to talk to you and that we had a good conversation that I hope my listeners will see as food for thought when it comes to financial well-being, because yeah, it's a good one and it's a necessity. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Any
Thank you
last
so much for the
words?
opportunity. Oh, well, first off, thank you, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
And
Always.
where can my audience find you?
Yeah, the most relevant place to find me is LinkedIn. I believe, and I did a search this morning, I am the only Sloane Wilkins on LinkedIn.
Okay. Oh,
So
wow. Okay.
if you type that in, you should be able to find me.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. And please, if you like what you heard and it sparked something for you around financial well-being, please reach out and connect with Sloane either on LinkedIn or go even further and check out his website. Is Sloane with an E a female name and Sloane without an E the male version? Or is it just,
Yeah, that's
is
exactly
that?
right.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that before, but now I do. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here and appreciate your time. And thank you for listening. Remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.